This is Food Secure Nation with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson. Sponsored by Know Better, Do Better, KBDB. Engaging change makers, charting solutions, and driving progress for food security in America. Dr. Phil Knight.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks for listening. Our guest today is Claire Babineaux-Fontenot, the CEO for Feeding America, the largest hunger relief network in the United States. She is a nationally recognized voice on poverty, equity, and dignity. She has been named the Time Woman of the Year. She is a regular contributor to national conversations about hunger, justice, and leadership. But what makes Claire's leadership remarkable isn't her platform, it's what she chose to do with it. Learn about that and Claire next on Food Secure Nation. Welcome back, everyone. Dr. Phil Knight here with you. And Jerry, you get the rare privilege today to introduce our guest.
Well, we are having with us somebody who has made a tremendous difference in our world of food security from an amazingly big heart. And while I can say many, many other incredible things about Claire Babineaux-Fontenot, the CEO of Feeding America, there is nothing more significant than the size of her heart. And I think we're going to hear her today, and it will leave no doubt in anybody's mind, this is a woman who cares. Now, with a tremendous amount of expertise, and Claire, welcome to our show. And you know, welcome to a little transition time in your life. I think the first thing you got to do is tell our listeners what you're up to.
Oh, my. So first, I still have a day job, gentlemen. So until April the 14th, it will continue to be my great privilege to be the CEO of Feeding America. And then my job after April, between April the 14th and July 1, will be to make certain I've done everything in my power to position the new CEO for success. This is a mission that matters so much to the three of us and to so many, most importantly, to tens of millions of people who turn to the charitable food system for help each year, that we all benefit if he is wildly successful. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that's true. And I am also thinking about, and what happens after July the 1st? And maybe I'll be inspired by something the two of you do or say to get an answer to that, but I don't have a solid one yet. So it's a work in progress. I'm kind of thinking about it right now.
Well, don't stand on one leg waiting for that to happen out of this crew. But you know, we're definitely fans, head of your fan club and cheerleaders for you, Claire. And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show today at this particular juncture is to talk a little bit about the difference you've made in this work. And I want to specifically start off by talking about, we know that food insecurity isn't real mysterious. We've got food, we have systems, we have people who care deeply, and yet it still persists. So there's a difference between helping people and trusting people. Mm. And this is where this conversation really begins, because over the past several years, something amazing has happened across America and across Feeding America. Something in the national hunger conversation, to me and to Jerry, felt different. The language changed. The posture shifted. And there was a more of an emphasis on lived experience, not as testimonial, but as guidance. Mm. And we attribute that to you.
Wow.
You came in and Feeding America had always served its members and continues to. But I remember a conversation, and I hope you'll tell the whole story, where someone mentioned to you that we exist to serve our members. And you kind of like, let me think about that.
I think I recall that conversation, and I wish I only had it once. So maybe we can back up a little bit for the audience here. So let me start by saying, as you've acknowledged, man, what a network. There are people in the Feeding America network, over 200 food banks, over 60,000 agency partners and meal programs, over a million volunteers, guys, over a million volunteers.
Yeah, yeah.
That stretch across the whole nation who sign up to be helpful. And that's been true since inception, that's what people of this network have always endeavored to do. And the national organization in which I served most directly always had hardworking, dedicated, principled people working inside of it. But I do think that we lost our way at the national organization for a while. I think we lost our way in two types of extremes, and sometimes we were doing both extremes at the same time, depending upon who it was. On the one hand, there was a time when our national organization thought that its value should be interpreted by how many things it told the other people in the food bank that they needed to do, that they actually did exactly the way we said it. In fact, my very first week in this job, I went to an offsite with our executive team, and there was a gallery walk with little stickies, if you know what I mean. So there's a board, and it says, and the caption on one of the boards was, "What does success look like for you in the network?" And a member of the Feeding America National Organization executive team wrote on a sticky, "When the food banks do exactly what we tell them, exactly the way we told them to do it."
Wow. That so does not align with my reputation, I just want to say.
Wow. And you know what's so sad is, so the bad part is that people could feel that that's what we thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these other hardworking, dedicated, principled people, co-equals with different roles stretched across the country, they could feel that the national organization considered success them just doing what we told them to. So that was one extreme. On the other extreme, we had people, well-meaning people, yet again at the national organization, who thought their job was, quote, to serve the food banks, unquote. And I was in a conversation with someone who expressed that, and I said, "This is where we started, right?" Right, Dr. Phil? I said, "Do you really fundamentally believe that? Because if you do, it will shape the way that you engage with the network, and it'll be defining." Because I don't feel that way, and let me talk to you about why. They and we serve people experiencing hunger. We don't serve them. They don't serve us. They and we serve people experiencing hunger. And it took a few rounds of me talking to more than one person and talking. I said, "Well, I don't know how the food banks would feel about that." Told them. And I said, "Well, the good news is I'm going to tell them myself." So they won't. And I hope what they will feel is that when we join arms as co-equals with different roles, and when we understand better as a national organization how and where we can provide value, and when we respect how and where food bankers can provide value, and then when we and food bankers think about, and what about those pantry partners? And how do they step into their opportunities for value? And how about the partner state associations and the value they contribute? When we start doing addition through addition in this organization, the unlock is remarkable. So I remember that conversation. I remember repeating it a few times. And then I remember having the first person I said it to, speaking to some people and explaining to them so eloquently, "No, no, we don't work for the food banks." I'm like, "Yes, Success! Voila! Voila!
Yeah, and I think because there's so many food banks in so many different circumstances with leadership at various different levels of experience, you can never quite get your finger on the pulse anyway. I mean, you just really can't. The pulse is changing all the time. And so,
all the time.
But I think having an anchor like the person who is hungry is the center of the work. So everything we do has to work for them. And then you start to branch out from that anchor to all of the other work. We never done that as a network. And I've been around this for a long time.
Long time.
Yeah. I had teeth back then. But anyway, I think fundamentally starting from that point and moving forward has been a tremendous value add for all of us trying to solution this work.
Now let me interrupt you too, because y'all are having a great show, and share that I got to take a little break here, but we're going to come back. We're going to come back with Jerry Brisson, Dr. Phil Knight, and Claire Babineau Fontenot, the CEO, until
April the 14th.
A few months from now at Feeding America. We'll be right back with you in just a moment.
You're listening to Food Secure Nation with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson, sponsored by Know Better, Do Better.
Welcome back, everyone. Jerry Brisson, Dr. Phil Knight. Jerry, you were wrapping up a conversation with Claire right then, so I'm going to be really gracious and give it back to you here.
Oh, put that gold star on the calendar. Here we go.
Wow.
Well, you know, there's so many stories I can tell from my own experience of this change, but one of the biggest is recognizing that the way we talk about people either contributes to or takes away from stigma. Mm. And we know that shame is one of the main reasons people don't come to pantries to get help, right? They just feel so ashamed of themselves. So you put that person in the middle of the story, and you start being a lot more careful about the things you say. And you stop saying people are needy, and you start saying people are worth investing in. And just that one change where the person in the middle of the story is actually part of the solution, not a problem to be solved, changes everything. And I want you to talk about that.
Oh, wow. And you said it so beautifully. I agree with every bit of what you just said, and there's a lot in what you said there. I think about having all of these moments of epiphany, and I hope and pray that my epiphanies are not done, because I still have a lot of work that I need to do in being better. But I remember a big moment of epiphany. I was actually had the privilege of leading a fireside chat with some people with lived experience with hunger and stuff. In fact, some of them had living experience with hunger. And one of the people, a lady by the name of Barbie, was on the panel, to be on the panel. And she mentioned something about lived expertise. And she just said it casually, and we kept on going. But it never left me. It's with me still. I started thinking, wait, expertise. Oh. Are we acting as though we believe people who are inside of a challenge have wherewithal about why they got in there and what it would take for them to get out of it? Huh. How would we show up if we really believe that? If we valued people as having lived and living expertise, how do we treat other people with expertise? How do we talk about them? How do we talk to them? Do we speak for them?
Yeah.
What do we do with our microphones, right? Do we mostly use them on their behalf, or do we turn it over to them? It's been a fascinating journey. Again, it's not done. And it's so gratifying to know that journey I've been on is also a journey that we as a collective have been on, right? And that in the process, I try my best not to be angry at who I used to be, but instead be inspired by who I'm becoming. And I think the national organization, Feeding America, not just the national organization itself, but Feeding America as a network, has a lot to feel good about in who it's becoming, whom it is that we're becoming across the country, and how we're centering people with lived experience and living experience, and what it means for them to be experts. And I hope we get a chance to talk about what happened with that network strategic framework, because it is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons I can feel good about my transition, in fact.
Let's get the book chapter and verse on that one, because, sister, that was good preaching right there. Don't feel bad about who you weren't. Feel good about who you're becoming. That'll preach, I'm telling you, for individuals and organizations. That one will roll.
Well, and I have come to believe that any movement that needs public support and a significant amount of public support to solve, right? If the people you're working with who are in the situation that's creating stress and tension, whatever that is, if the public sees them not as part of the solution, they will lose faith in every solution.
Mm.
The only way to solve complex social problems is to see the people with those issues as a significant part of the solution. And I will tell you, I believe that the people experiencing hunger are the most important people to the solution. The most. Yeah. Nobody will provide better clarity or be more motivated to get from here to there than the people in that situation. And if we can't change that dynamic, I think it is hopeless to get enough support to change it for them.
Absolutely. And I just think about what you just said, Jerry, is so true, on many levels. Did you realize you were a layered, multifaceted human? It's so clear from everything that you're saying here. So as I think about unpacking what you were just talking about, I don't know. I have limited resources, and I have a more abundance than many in terms of my resources, and yet still I have limited resources. And of the resources I have, I don't feel I've got the luxury of wasting any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're inside of a challenge and the answer that's being presented is, well, it's always going to be like this. So what you do is just keep on sending your resource in, knowing it's endless.
Yeah.
It's never going to get any better. It's just going to stay like this. Because those poor people, you know, the victims, the ones that we pat on their heads, this is just their lot. I wouldn't consider that an investment. By the way, you talked about investment before. I would consider that folly.
Yeah.
So the way we engage the work now, and many of you were doing it before it became a national, I'm using the term positively here, a national contagion inside of our network. Because, by the way, the two of you, you knew many of these things already. You were already putting those things into practice in the way that you were working. The fact that we've now brought it all together and the way we do it together is so beautiful and powerful. That's the point to be made. But looking at the kinds of things, like I mentioned network strategic framework. I want to talk about it. I'll try not to take too long. I want to get to a particular example, though. So in the network strategic framework, first of its kind, a federated network, so independent 501c3s spread all across the country who come together in common bond and fidelity to a mission, not because someone gets to lord over them and tell them you've got to do it this way, but because they have similar aspirations and desires for their communities across the nation. That's what we are at Feeding America. So we came together as a federated network, but the most important differentiator in the way we did the network strategic framework this time is that we didn't just say we care about the voices of people experiencing hunger. We actually centered their voices, and we actually changed stuff because of stuff that they said. And the one that hit me the most that I will always hold with me is we were feeling particularly good about the way that we were looking at data. We had a pillar that we're going to advance for the whole network that says, and we as a collective, I mean, that says we're going to work on data. Got to work on data. Okay, great. We're going to work on data. So we're in a room, and there's some people with lived experience sitting in the room, and we're feeling good. And we're basically asking them to bless what we're saying. And someone says, wait, are you saying you're doing this for us? I said, yeah. Yes, of course. Like for me? Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, well, then you're not solving my biggest needs. I said, well, what do you mean? And we had a very sophisticated PowerPoint presentation, Dillman, that we'd already shared. What is this person talking about? And the person said, well, I want you to use data to tell me where I can find food. Hmm. And, you know, finding food as a person experiencing hunger wasn't even on the list.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't even on the list.
That is a great example. That is a great example.
It came on the top of the list. Now it's on the top of the list. Now we're working on it. We've got all kinds of beautiful things happening. But isn't that a great example, gentlemen?
It is. And it's a great example of how framing things differently changes so many other things just because now you can ask better questions.
Yes, for sure. You're right.
I have so much to say here, but I have to take a break. So, dang it, wraps.
She does have a napkin full of ink. I'm just saying. We're all crazy. I'm a little concerned, but we'll make it through.
All right. Claire Babineaux-Fontenot, the CEO of Feeding America, is our guest today. We're privileged to have her. That's Jerry Brisson. I'm Dr. Phil Knight. We're back with you in just a moment. Welcome back, everyone. Dr. Phil Knight here with you, Jerry Brisson, in our studio. Our guest, the CEO for Feeding America, Claire Babineaux-Fontenot, who is our boss in many, many ways. She's our leader, and she's making a transition out of this role into whatever, I hope, some rest. I mean, we've been playing Where's Claire since, like, you're Carmen Sandiego here. So
I think her husband would agree with you 100%.
I think you're right.
No doubt. No doubt.
In fact, I more than think it. So, he has not been shy about it. As I've talked to him about different things that are bubbling up, and I said, what do you think about? Blah, blah, blah. If you want to know what I think you ought to pause.
Yeah.
What if you just took some time off? That is where he keeps starting. And I'm like, but you know, there's this opportunity.
Yeah. Thinking about, Claire, when you came in and you had this epiphany and it got grounded and it took root and the network latched onto it. Now, I believe my mentor would say it like this: people buy into the leader before they buy into the vision. And so I think people bought into you first, and then they bought into what you said. And now we got to put our money where our mouth is, right?
Yes,
so for the first time in some 50 years, the sitting president of the United States at the time decided that he wanted to have a hunger conference.
Yes.
And so there were several of us that got invited to this. We were there from our respective states, and here comes Claire. Now, most people travel, people who are, you know, top-level corporate CEO leaders, travel with an entourage. And at the President's Conference on Hunger and Health, you come with an entourage. But it's not what people would think. It was actually people who volunteered to come with you to talk at the President's Conference about their lived experience facing food insecurity and hunger.
Yes.
That's quite the entourage.
It is. It is. I have never been in better company. I can tell you that. It was just so, so powerful. And I witnessed a person with living and lived experience with hunger on her way on that battle and actually making great progress. I witnessed her introduce the President of the United States at that conference.
Mm.
it was just one of the most beautiful moments I've ever had. And but if I may share, there was a less than beautiful second or a couple of minutes that then led to something that was just so right. As I walked in fact, I was looking, I noticed my badge had a green dot on it. Have I ever talked to you guys about the green dot on my badge?
I think our role now is to say no.
Even if you've heard the first time.
Well, you say no, I'll say
out.
Yes, but it's worth repeating.
So with that indulgence, I'll go ahead and repeat. So here I am. I get in, and I'm with all of these remarkable people, some of whom were afraid to fly, but flew for the first time because they wanted their voices to be heard. Many of whom had never flown and felt that it was that important and it was exciting, but some even were scared. And they got on those planes because they needed their voices to be heard. So there I am with that entourage. We arrive, they are giving us credentials, and they give me a credential, and my credential has a green dot on it. And I start looking at everybody else's deal, and nobody else had a green dot on their badge. So I said, so, is there something to this green dot? And they're like, oh, I don't have one. Okay, so then we get to the big room where the president's going to be. And then I discovered what the green dot was for. So I had people walk up to me. They looked at my badge and they said, oh, no, ma'am. Your seat's over here. And they escort me all the way to the front of the building, of the room. Right near where I have a view, a special view, with the dignitaries who are going to be there. And I'm like, what's going on? And they said, oh, no, that's what that dot means. You get to sit over here. I said, wait, what about the people that I came with? And they said, oh, surely they'll find a place. And I remember just having so much clarity and saying, oh, well, then you'll know where to find me because I'm going to be sitting with them. And I got up. And I walked all the way, and they actually, as it felt perfect from the standpoint of symbolism. Of course, they were in the very last row, right?
Oh, wow.
There I was in the very last row, surrounded by this excellence. And I sat there, and I knew that's exactly where I was supposed to be seated. I was with my people. And I have nothing against people on the front row. I just don't think my seat is over there with them. I love the seat I had.
You know, that's a great story. And I introduced you because of your heart. And what that story does is just prove me right. And I love that.
Well, doesn't Bill just use all of his energy to prove you right all the time, Jerry?
Oh, that's all he ever does is prove me right.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, in a serious note, and
we do have to differentiate those on this show occasionally.
The who are you sitting with is a great question to frame your legacy. Because you got us to think differently about that. And you got us to the place where you described yourself, this is the best seat in the house. And I want to sit here, not because I'm doing something for someone else, not because I'm sacrificing privilege, which I could have if I wanted. No, I'm sitting here because this is the best seat in the house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would have been a sacrifice to be in the other seat.
Yeah.
I got the best seat in the house. And by the way, while I was sitting there, when the young woman who introduced President Biden stood up and did the introduction, I sat next to a lady. Her name is Anita. I'll just use her first name. She's from the great state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And Anita leaned in to me right next to her, and she was crying. And after the introduction, when the president was speaking. She was crying. And I said, are you okay? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, Claire, he's saying what I told him. I said, what? She said, those words he's saying, they came from me.
Wow.
It was so, is there a better seat in the house than that?
Wow.
Next to Anita? When she has that moment of clarity, not only that her voice, that she should speak up, but that her voice resonated with the president of the United States so much that he said her words. It was just beautiful.
Well, if we had the whole year, 52 shows, to just cover the many amazing experiences you've had, and I want to say as the CEO of Feeding America, but more I want to say as the intense learner that you are, as that person who is allowing the world to touch her and acting on that action or that reality in different ways based on that, we could do 52 shows and they would all be great. They would all be great.
Well, but now you're not letting me brag on you. I'm going to have to take. You might be able to edit this out, but I think there's somebody else who's the editor. Don't let him do it. I've got a few things I've got to say about these two people first. So let me first list out something, two things that I mentioned off the record that I need to be on the record with. Okay. Number one, it may be that most of the people who listen in are already aware of this truth. One of the hardest things to come by when you become a chief executive is truth. It's hard to differentiate between among the various reasons why people might be telling you something, to try to then extract from that. So what's the truth of that, right? That's never been an issue with either of you. The way that you seem to interpret your responsibilities in this work is as people who lift up what the truth is and people who are willing to say things that are unpopular in pursuit of what is possible for the mission. And there's been more than one time when I've had conversations with each of you separately and then with both of you together before too, where there was something that was awfully inconvenient that I needed to hear, and that you told me, and then I didn't doubt it at all, but that it was the truth from your perspective, and it changed my perspective when it happened. And Jerry, there's one in particular, you probably know the one I'm talking about, where you helped me understand. We knew what the broad implications were of what we were trying to do. You helped us understand what the deeply personal implications were of what we were doing. And it changed things for me. And then I hope that I leveraged my evolution to help our organization to evolve alongside me. So I want to say that that's one thing. The second thing is the joy that you bring to this. I think people sometimes undervalue joy. And sometimes there's expression in my community that I'm not letting anybody rob my joy, rob me of my joy. And inside of that expression is an acknowledgement that we get to have a say on whether or not we feel joy. The joy can be a choice. And you have dealt with very, very serious subjects. The subject of hunger in America is hard to be more serious than that. You've dealt with personal challenges for all of us. Life keeps lifing as we go along, and you've dealt with those. And in every circumstance that I've been alongside you in, you've also brought into that laughter and joy. And I hope your audience gets excited when they know there's another installment, because they know there's going to be something to cry about, sure. But there's going to be something to laugh about, too.
Yeah.
And you refuse to be denied joy, and you keep spreading it around. And I'm I'm a beneficiary of that, and I appreciate you both for it.
Thank you, Claire. Here's a little truth as we close out this segment with you. And you're our friend. You're our mm-hmm. colleague. You're our leader. Mm-hmm. You are a change agent. Mm-hmm. And you are an excellent example of a servant leader who remains humble and curious. And yes, we have joy about this work. And the reason we have joy is because we believe in the families, we believe in the food banks, and we believe in our friends who support us. So we believe. And that's where that joy comes from.
Mm.
Claire Babineau Fontenot, our friend and our CEO at Feeding America, it is our joy, privilege, and honor to have you as our guest on Food Secure Nation. Jerry and I are back in just a moment to wrap up this edition.
Food Secure Nation is sponsored by Know Better, Do Better. Engaging change makers, charting solutions, and driving progress for food security in America. Once again, here are Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson.
Jerry, one of my favorite people on the planet, and definitely one of the favorite people we've ever had on the show, Claire Babineau Fontenot.
Yeah, love Claire. We'll miss her at the helm of Feeding America, but we're not going to miss her because we are going to stay in touch. And if you've been listening, you know why.
Yeah. So the remarkable thing we talked about with Claire today was about agency, about putting the person experiencing hunger at the center of your decision making. That was a big shift for our network nationally.
Yeah, well, when you're out there trying to find food and money, you think it's all about you. But really, in truth, we don't do that work except for the people we serve. And it just took Claire to remind us of that. And she's been so gentle in so many ways, never accusing us, but leading from a place of understanding and compassion, easy to follow. And we have been so fortunate to have her leadership.
Well, she reminded us that agency, solutions don't work for people unless you work with people.
Yeah, right.
And it maybe seems simple, but it was revolutionary for those of us in the network. I think following agency and keeping the person, a household that's experiencing hunger, at the center of the decision-making for all of us, wherever we do this work, is how we build a food secure nation.
For sure.